Anybody here sad that we're not doing research today?
Yeah.
Don't raise your hand. So what we're going to talk about this morning is traditional research. And by that, we're generally referring to libraries. Now, I have a couple kind of survey questions I want to get here. First of all, everybody here has a library card, I'm assuming. Who has a library card? Anybody here not have a library card? Oh, man, a couple people here don't have a library card. Definitely, in order before you get any benefit from this, first step. Hopefully you have a local library or you can get to a university or something that applies to you. But everybody generally has a library card. Everybody here probably reads. But now let me ask you this question. How many people have ever used a library or library resources to research debate? Okay, actually a good many people, about half. How many people this year have used the library to research debate? Ooh, only a couple. That's what I was kind of afraid of. The library is actually probably one of the best places to start out trying to figure out what this topic is about. Because really what you can get there is excellent background information on the topic. And what I want to do in this lecture today, so again, we're not going to be able to cover every single resource at the library that might possibly be helpful for you, but hopefully we'll give you a couple key tools about how to find things at the library. And again, this is a lecture that you should try to apply maybe as soon as you get home, because I think applying it is more important than just hearing about it. And also maybe whetting your appetite about a couple of the sources and the things that you might be able to find in there. So let me ask this question here kind of to start us off with some good sugar this morning. Why use libraries? We're in the 21st century. Isn't everything out there on the internet? Does anybody want to make an argument? And I like arguments on either side of the issue. Somebody want to argue that we don't need to go to a library anymore because everything's out there on the internet? Or does anybody want to take the opposite position here? Yes?
Everything isn't out there on the internet.
What's not out there on the internet? Why do we want to go to the library? What can we get at the library that we can't necessarily get on the internet?
Books.
Google Books. Google Books. With the advent of Google Books, that becomes unnecessary, right?
Probably.
No. Right?
Really old newspaper articles.
For some reason. You can probably get a lot of really old news articles even on Google Books. Okay, Hannah, what do you think?
Not all books.
Okay, that would be one point on the books point. Guthrie, what do you think?
You also get the benefit of having a librarian there who, if you can't find something, will probably know where it is and can also give you some serious help with that.
That's an excellent point as well. That again, if you maybe can't figure something out on Google, you have a kind of a assistant researcher who you don't pay anything to and helps you out. What do you think, Elaine? Right. So there's a lot of very expensive databases out there that are internet resources. So we're kind of using the internet at the library in a more efficient way to access some better sources. What would be potentially some of those databases like Elaine's talking about here? We've talked about some of them this week that you might want to check out. Billy, what do you think?
LexisNexis.
LexisNexis might be one. Anybody else have another idea? Yes.
EBSCOhost.
EBSCOhost. Now that's another. EBSCOhost is one you could probably find at your regular library. So that's good. Yes. Anybody else over here? What do you think, Nathaniel? JSTOR probably would be on like a major university library. So yeah, that's good. Good job. Yeah, okay. I think we've hit a lot of these here. I think we hit all three of these really well. Oops, we missed one. Missed one that I think is worth talking about. You have access to pricey databases. We threw some of those out there. You have access really to academic books. And what we're talking about what would be an indication that a book is maybe written for a more academic audience. I think we talked about this in a previous lecture. It might be flag it as something you would want to read for debate. What were some of the indicators we talked about, I think, maybe in the sources lecture or in, I think it was in the sources lecture. Yes, Elaine. Footnotes would be a good indicator that the book would be good to read. What else? What else could indicate that this would be a book published for an academic audience that would be good to look at? Somebody want to throw something out here. What do you think? Okay, but oftentimes you have a professor who writes a book to a common audience. So maybe true, maybe not true. What do you think?
If it goes through peer review?
Okay, it could be an article that's peer reviewed, but let's talk about books. I'm thinking of a big one here, and this is maybe a little, not that subtle, but you kind of got to know about it a little bit. In the back, Christy, what do you think? No, not so much. What would be an indicator that a book is an is targeted an academic audience besides footnotes? Nathaniel, what do you think?
Professional and specific.
Okay, one more volunteer. Margaret, what do you think?
Um, in,
Endnotes are a large index.
Okay, we said footnotes already. That could now one of the things what I'm trying to get at here. So you footnotes would be an indicator. Another indicator that we talked about previously would be the publisher. Is it a university press? If a university press is publishing a book, that's probably that's going to be probably targeted more likely than not an academic audience. That would be an excellent book to pick up on the debate topic. And so those would be two big ones that would probably be relevant here. Now, access to a multitude of dictionaries. This is why it's maybe important, and I'm going to talk about kind of an exercise that I would recommend that maybe a club do to utilize library resources. But I think this is one of the reasons why you should visit the library at the very beginning of the year. And if you haven't visited it already, as soon as you get home, you need to try to find one of the better libraries in your area and go check it out. And that is access to a multitude of dictionaries, which are really unavailable for free online. We'll be talking about some of those, maybe talking about a few things about a couple of those dictionaries that you may not know about. But again, we're trying to get definitions of the resolution boundaries right up in the beginning of the season. So an access to a multitude of dictionaries can really be beneficial. And we're talking more things here than what we call like a Common Man dictionary, like American Heritage or Merriam-Webster or something like that. Okay. Now, there's really two types of libraries that you probably want to differentiate a little bit here. There's, I'm sure, more, but I'm going to classify two big groups. One is going to be like a university library. Another is going to be a public library. Now, both of these have benefits. For example, probably a public library is going to be maybe more accessible for you as a high school student than necessarily a university library as far as their policies and how willing they are to allow you to use the resources. Probably is also going to be closer. But at the same time, a university library, and if you just take a really quick look at, I guess, what's called the stacks, which are the books in the library, you'll see this very quickly. There's a big difference between who they're targeting in most cases, and the caliber of their sources in a public library. A public library, and you'll generally find this fairly quickly, is going to have, they may have books on environmental policy, but they may be aimed at a lay audience. And again, those can be beneficial, but the most beneficial thing for you to do is going to be to go to the, try to get books, again, by those university presses, by the ones that have, you know, extensive footnoting, that are definitely aimed at an academic audience. And those are probably going to be primarily found through a university library. And again, a university library, probably public libraries will not be able to afford some of these very valuable databases like JSTOR, LexisNexis, probably only going to get that at a major university library. But public libraries still have some great resources. And for example, how many people live within 5 minutes of a public library? Most everybody here lives within 5 minutes of a public library. So that's a lot easier to access. I live within like 2 minutes, fortunately. You can get newspapers, dictionaries, introductory books, and basic online databases like EBSCOhost, which is really a pretty nice setup, but you can get it generally for free at most public libraries. Or one of the things I would recommend that you do, in order to make sure you're at, how many people have like an electronic account on their library card that you can go check out? Maybe you don't know that you have it, but if you have never been there, I would recommend that you log in on your electronic account on your library card. It probably will have an example or a section under that user profile where it talks about electronic resources that the library has access to and probably will have usernames, passwords, access codes, those kind of things that your library does have access to, or you can chat with the librarian on that. Okay, do you have a question over here? And I'll get Guthrie in a second. What do you have?
Are there parts of JSTOR that are open to the public? Because yesterday I got into the JSTOR database.
Yeah, generally what JSTOR allows you to do is access the first page of an article or maybe the abstract. So it kind of whets your appetite. And again, the general public can generally, and like this is why you want to get this access to this database. Generally, you can buy one of the journal articles for like $15, $25. So like if you just saw the article and you're like, well, this is a great article, let's buy it. You could buy it for $15 or $25. But as we all know, even in a good publication like that, about how much of that publication probably is not going to be able to be carded? Somebody want to toss a number out there? Probably about 75%, you're not even on cards. You might get one or two cards and be paying $25 or $15 for it. So, you know, again, that's a great reason to try to get access to this on an open, you know, a library or something like that. Yes?
Just so everybody knows, you do not have to be at a library to have access to EBSCOhost. You can go online to your county library website and they have a section called Resources. And then you go to Databases and you can go to one called Academic Search Premier, which is EBSCOhost. You do have to have your library card and input your name and the number on your library card, and it will allow you to access your EBSCOhost.
Right, right. You can do it remotely. So yeah, and a lot of the databases that are available, if you have a library card and you have that online database on that online login, you can't access all those from home. So that's a great thing, too. Thanks for mentioning that, Guthrie. And let's see, another thing. I mean, I'm not sure. I think I've seen a lot of libraries with EBSCOhost. They have maybe a couple other ones. Your library might have a lot better resources than some of the South Carolina ones do that I've seen, or the Cobb County, where I also have experience down in Georgia. So you might want to check. You might have access to a really nice database that just nobody knows about. So that's always a good thing to check on. What do you actually have access to? And so somebody tell me why it would be valuable to use a database like EBSCO as opposed to using Google. Why we have everything on Google, why would I want to use EBSCO? Somebody, this is kind of basic, but Elaine, what do you think?
One, because fewer people have access to it, so you might get some really good pieces of information that maybe other clubs or other regions may not always have access to.
Okay, yeah, that's actually what is kind of, I guess, something I was thinking about, but yeah, that's good. Okay, so EBSCOhost, people may not be getting their evidence off of that, so if you get your evidence off of that, you might be able to throw them for a curve. Anybody else have some ideas on that? Shane, what do you think?
If you have everything on Google, whereas EBSCOhost is going to be a more limited number.
Okay, so maybe you can kind of take out some of the clutter and be more effective in your search. Okay, that's another thing, too. Okay, we're looking. Okay, here you go. This is for the obvious one. What's the obvious one here? Yes.
They're going to be more credible.
Maybe. I can get access to white papers and PhDs and journals on Google. What's kind of the thing here? This is the big one. Think this through. What's going to be on EBSCOhost that I cannot get on Google? Okay. Basically, a lot of these, even EBSCOhost has access to some things. Maybe it's even archives of the New York Times that you can't access through Google without a paid subscription. So a lot of the publications they have access to, you have to have a paid subscription to actually get them. So you don't really even have access to them on Google to start with. So that's something to bear in mind, too. You may have access to the New York Times, but maybe only for like the last month or couple days as opposed to the actual archives. Okay.